Welcome to this episode of the Nothing Ventured Primer with me, Arish Shah. In these Primer episodes, we explore the insights and backgrounds of our guests to give you a bit of an idea of what they've been up to and how they got involved in the tech and venture ecosystem. Enjoy. This season of Nothing Ventured is sponsored by Odin. Odin helps angels, VCs, and founders to raise and deploy capital seamlessly. You can structure your SPVs and now run your funds, handle capital calls, portfolio management more smoothly and easily in one place. Founders use Odin to raise their entire round in a few clicks by simply sending investors a link and receiving investments immediately. Odin works with over 5,000 investors and over 150 emerging fund managers and angel syndicates globally. Head to joinodin.com to learn more. That's joinodin.com. Hello and welcome to this episode of the Nothing Ventured Primer with me, Arish Shah. Today in the studio with me, I'm really excited to have Fatou Diagne and Stephanie Heller. Fatou and Stephanie are co-founders of Bootstrap Europe, a venture debt fund that provides growth debt to scale-up businesses, providing progressive, ambitious entrepreneurs with non-dilutive funding to help them grow. Fatou and Stephanie, thank you so much for joining me here in the studio.
Thank you for having us.
Amazing. Let's dive straight in. So for our audience to get to know you a bit better, I'd love to understand from both of you what your first jobs were.
So I'm from Senegal. Uh-huh. And when I came to Europe and people asked me, what's your first job? I was like, I've never worked in my life. So I did everything and went to work for McDonald's to get at least one work experience that paid for my beach holidays that year.
Well, I'm very happy to hear that. I'm an ex-McDonald's boy myself. I do say that working at a place like McDonald's gives you such an incredible understanding of customer experience, customer retail. Support, like retail. Like it's actually a really good grounding for future life skills.
Yeah.
Margins. Like I used to remember, I'm sorry to digress for a second, but I get very happy about McDonald's from my days at the 15, 16 years. But we'd managed to set up a system whereby I had someone backing me up and we used to take triple the amount per hour on my till than any of the other tills, just consistently, because we worked out a system and made it work. So that's what I'm very proud of. Obviously, everything I've done since then pales in comparison. And Stephanie, what about you?
Well, my first way of making money was to give mass tutoring lessons to students in prépa in French, which means they were probably first year university level. Mm. And obviously, I was maybe a couple of years older, so it was totally faking it until they could maybe be successful as well. But I remember a couple of times locking myself in the loo thinking, oh, I don't know if I can solve this math problem for them, and then finding the answer in the last minute. So
and this was pre-internet days, presumably, or like pre kind of deep internet days.
Oh, right? Yeah, you didn't have access to any smartphone or anything else. But
I'm going through that with one of my daughters at the moment. She presented me with a math problem. I was like top set maths at kind of A levels, and mm-hmm. I didn't pursue it at university, but I was sat there looking at it going, I have no idea how I would answer this now because I've just forgotten. I joke that if you're an accountant, you have to be a bad mathematician because we're the only people that can make 1 and 4 equal -3. So what did you do before you both got into the kind of tech and venture ecosystem?
Right before we started our adventure, I helped set up a weather insurance company mm-hmm. that was mandated by the African Union, and the UN had to implement it. So we set up a drought insurance scheme that the first year covered 3 million people wow. who were experiencing drought. And I was like, wow, innovation and finance can do this. I mean,
but then they stopped doing that, presumably.
No. It was built as a mutual insurance so that the countries would own it.
Incredible.
And they will each have a stake in it. So if Niger would say like, oh, Kenya, why are you taking the insurance payout? Are you going to use it properly? And so they monitored it really well. So now it's a portfolio of hundreds of million and it insures the Africans by themselves for themselves.
I mean, I'm again, not to geek out on this, but like... I constantly say innovation in Africa is true innovation because they really solve problems that
the next day you see the impact.
Impact people on the ground on a day-to-day basis. Yeah. That's incredible. And yourself?
Well, just before, financing startups, I guess, through loans, I was working for family offices in Zurich. And we were, I mean, still being an entrepreneur, started a business advising them, a few clients, to do direct investment in companies, to take LP stakes in funds. And it was quite successful at the time. They were amazing investors, were just helping execute on their ideas. And we ended up having a few successes. There was one company that IPO for $5.5 billion in the health data system, and then it got taken private for $7 billion. Another one in the music royalty business, based out of London, actually, that exited also above $1 billion. So it was very, you know, interesting learning and also helping people and also, you know, setting up the first business effectively.
Yeah, I mean, family offices, especially in Zurich, I presume, are like, correct. You know, you've got a great kind of hunting ground for family offices there. But I've, you know, having met a number of people that work in or are the principals of family offices, what's incredible is that you get to do a lot of diverse stuff. You go across multiple asset classes, right? Because you're working with property, you're working with businesses, you're working with bonds and equities and so on and so forth.
Sometimes,
like, yeah. This season of Nothing Ventured is proudly sponsored by Emerge One. Emerge One provides fractional CFO support to venture-backed tech startups and scale-ups. They work with businesses from C to Series B that have been backed by some of the UK, US, and Europe's best venture capital funds. They provide support from capital allocation and management, KPIs and reporting, fundraising support, financial modeling, investor relations, and investor management. Come check them out at emergeone.co.uk when you're scaling fast and have need of a CFO.
The amazing project we worked on was this amazing tower, no? By Frank Gehry.
So literally you're investing in artwork, right? Yeah. And you kind of sit there and you realize, okay, people actually invest in wine and they invest in all of these sort of non-traditional assets, which people wouldn't even consider like day to day, right? And often obviously wouldn't even be able to access. So I think, yeah, absolutely incredible. And what would you, you know, what triggered your move into raising a venture debt fund? Because that's somewhat different.
Yeah, well, it's like 12 years ago, there was a complete blank space, in our view, in Europe for venture debt.
Probably still is.
probably still gray now, but not yet populated. And so, I mean, the nice thing about working in family offices, they're very entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
And if you have a little bit of this entrepreneurial DNA, I think Stephanie has it 150%. I have it maybe 100%. when you see that there is a market opportunity and no one is there and you can just invade the space, we went in.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, because I mean, again, we'll talk about this in the main podcast. It's really clear that people don't understand venture debt particularly well. They don't understand where it fits into the whole equity stack or the whole funding stack. And I think there's still, again, in Europe, because we have such traditional kind of views around venture and entrepreneurship and risk, right? That any kind of debt is sort of frowned upon. But I always say, like, OPM, right? Other people's money in business is the first thing that you should be looking to do. And what do you think you'd be both be doing if you hadn't gone into the kind of venture and venture debt space?
For me, it's completely left field. When I was 18, I remember wanting to go into medicine.
Uh-huh.
And I think I'd probably be a gynecologic surgeon or something like this, because the death in childbirth, whether it's the mother or the kid, are still incredibly unacceptable today.
Like,
everybody knows someone who suffered somehow,
and
lost a baby, or the baby was hurt, or the mother. And so, yeah, that's probably what I would
do. Oh, wow. Lovely.
Yeah, it's true. Like, because Fatou and I, we go back a long, long time. So, you know, since I know her, I know, like, that's her second dream, sort of.
When I retire at 50.
Just start studying again.
Yeah. Retire at 50, study till you're 60, and then, like, maybe make
another 10, 15 years.
Yeah. You're going to live 40 years after that.
And how about you, Stephanie?
Well, for me, I think, you know, I would probably go into something like art, or, you know, being an artist, or dealing with art. I have like this huge passion for creation, innovation, you know, creativity. And I think that's probably why, you know, I work with startups and innovation today. And there is a couple of fields in the art space that are super interesting around synthetic bio. So you use, you know, science to build art. And I think I would totally do something around that.
I mean, that's beyond left field. But like, I have your debt to kind of art creation. I love that. So let's talk about Bootstrap Europe, right? Who's it for? Like, what are the verticals that you work with? What stages of businesses you work with? What geographies and kind of what is a typical debt to equity mix that you have?
Yeah, so I can start. And so we have a certain DNA around the type of companies we like. Anything that's a little bit geeky, we really, really love. And, you know, real technology in a way that is a step change compared to what exists today. So you'll find us in some deep tech fields. We'll do SaaS, of course. I mean, that's a little bit of the bread and butter of venture debt.
And the easier side of venture debt, presumably, because it's more predictable.
A little bit easier, yeah. We've done material science. So there are a lot of new fields that we think today are being created. And we're really excited about the next 3 years coming, because real science is really showing up in places where you didn't expect it.
It's interesting. I just had my last guest was a chap called Sam Benny. He's been kind of doing a lot of innovative stuff. He's currently building autonomous an autonomous AI-driven social network without the media part of social media. And, you know, we talked a lot about kind of the convergence of technologies over the coming 10 years. And I think, you know, we're right at the cusp of something changing quite significantly. You know, he was talking about obviously AI, but quantum as well, and then the convergence of those, plus potentially kind of, you know, blockchain, metaverse, whatever it might be. But yeah, it feels like we're right on the edge of some exciting stuff about to happen. And so what sort of stages do you typically come in?
So that's, you know, that's the main question we get from founders is, you know, when is the right moment to get the debt? And so when we look at them, we think, okay, you need to have at least one VC, if not two, preferably. So it means they will have had to have proper, let's say, institutions backing them before coming for the debt. The other moment where, you know, you can sort of see if it's a good idea to take the debt or not is when you're very sure of your unit economics.
Yeah.
So it's your business is basically profitable on your unit economics level, and the debt just comes to fuel the growth. So this is a good moment. And, you know, in the very deep science part, it's usually when they've received a lot of funding, equity funding to back, you know, research and development. And then if the company has a lot of patents, you know, potentially we could look at them a bit earlier than, let's say, a software business or...
Because the deep tech side, I guess, are constantly fundraising, right? Like, otherwise they're constantly diluting themselves down further. Bringing some debt into the equation helps them mix that up and is obviously non-dilutive to the founders. And so what are the sort of geographies that you operate in? Is it typically, is it just Europe, or do you work kind of... globally or UK, Europe? What's the best geographical mix for you?
Yeah, well, we cover the whole of Europe. We really looked at it from a pan-European basis, and we thought the next European champion, you don't know where it comes from, right? Skype was in Estonia, UiPath is in Romania, so you have to have a pan-European view, and we operate mostly Western Europe, it's true, but as long as it's a European HQ, European founder, European VCs, we have a company in New Zealand, for example, the US we can do, and actually we are looking really much to help our companies go to the US with our next fund, so... pretty open as long as there's a European link.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense because, I mean, I think, obviously Europe does need this sort of support. Like, we see the problems at the equity level sort of series B and beyond. You know, there just aren't the pools of capital here that there are in the US. We see companies listing in the US, et cetera. So obviously being able to jump the pond, go to the US, raise capital there, list there, exit there, tends to be what most European founders look for. And I think people that are able to help them on that journey and help realize that become invaluable. And again, we'll talk a little bit about that in the main podcast. And kind of when you're looking at sort of debt equity, what is the right mix for you guys?
It's usually you look at so to be really, really honest, we don't look at it this way.
Got it.
Because it really depends on the business, you know, and the traction, etc. But, you know, people would usually say, hey, maybe 1-3 ratio. So 1 for the debt and 3 for the equity, or 1-4 ratios. But we have, you know, something like 30 different criteria that we look at, and it's not necessarily one of them.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that makes sense. I think it's more probably from my perspective as a CFO, I'm kind of mining for information here, because I'm sure I've got a couple of companies in our own portfolio that may at some stage be coming out for that debt. But I think for founders, it's really important for them to understand that you know, debt is an important part of their of their capital stack,
yes,
but in the right proportion, right? And I've right. seen over leveraged businesses, which obviously then, you know, struggle to move forward. You're obviously really both very, very passionate about kind of what you do and innovation and tech. So would you mind talking about sort of three ventures that either in your portfolio or outside of your portfolio that you're really excited about?
Yeah, I can go. Linking back to, you know, the medical field and life science that we also invest a lot in, the one I'm really excited about now is called Hedera uh-huh. Diagnostics. Yeah. It's a liquid biopsy company, but more on the software side oh, and working with AI to do what has been done with non-invasive prenatal tests. I don't mm-hmm. know if you know. So instead of having to go into the matter and take a sample to identify whether there's a tumor, mm-hmm. you can detect it in the blood with markers. Mm-hmm. And that is very common to do now for prenatal testing. You need just a sample of blood. But in cancer, you still need to go open and take a sample of tissue.
Yeah.
Whereas Hedera would help accelerate the switch to liquid biopsy with their AI technology. And you can match automatically which therapy with you can do that with. So again, homegrown company in Europe, second time entrepreneur. We founded his first company mm-hmm. and amazing team.
Amazing. I mean, that, yeah. And this is the sort of innovation that you want to see funded, I guess,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. And do you have a couple of others as well?
Yeah. Yes. So there is one of, you know, our favorites, which is called TransferGo. Mm-hmm. So it's based here in the UK, but it's also very Eastern European in its business. What it does is it's like Wise, but mm. for the migrant population. So they innovate in the sense that their system is so efficient that you can move money much cheaply in a way that is very, very cheap compared to, let's say, what you would get with Western Union.
Sure.
And it's a population that really needs the additional financial help. So in a way, they're a little bit financial activists in that sense, but also with a real business model behind.
Mm-hmm.
And so their corridors are mainly Western Europe to Eastern Europe, but mm-hmm. also now they are moving towards, for instance, Africa, mm-hmm. Nigeria. And what people don't realize is the amount of money that we move from Western Europe to Eastern Europe is bigger than the amount of money moved between the US and Mexico and US Philippines combined.
That's ridiculous.
So it's very large market. And obviously that business is multi tens of millions in revenues, growing and profitable. So, you know, we've accompanied that company for a long time now.
I mean, remittance is a massive, yeah, it's a massive market. I mean, I just thinking about my own experience of transferring money to Nigeria, the most god-awful thing I've ever tried to do in my life.
Sure.
You know, businesses that we have in Africa that you know, even cross-border, so even
inefficient.
Even within borders, right? Like even transfer, I mean, like when I lived in New Guinea, everything was done by check, right? So international transfers.
Some kids would be like, what's a check?
Yeah, 100%. Well, apparently they've now, so but then they did the usual stupid thing of going full automation. So now everything is online. But of course, internet is patchy, to say the best, but power is even patchier. So, you know, in some regions, you just have therefore no access to any banking facilities, which is kind of counterintuitive. I love that. I mean, I think remittance is, yeah, it's a massive, massive business. I mean, we see obviously a lot of innovation happening there. And obviously, this was one of the areas where, in theory, Bitcoin was going to try and kind of, mm-hmm. You know, solve that problem. I always think about it from the perspective of kind of US, you know, US founders, US VCs, et cetera, who kind of only look from the microcosm of the US, where payments are still made by check largely.
I mean,
remittances are really bad. Like the whole internet banking system is awful because, you know, it's federal and state and all this sort of stuff. And actually, I think Europe has been very good at innovating in this space. You know, to your point, you know, whether it's TransferGo or companies like Wise, you know, they've just made it seamless, right?
But like there's still like way, way, way to go. I remember when I moved from South Africa to Europe and I was like, oh, okay, can I pay you with my phone? No. What do you mean I can't pay you with mobile money?
Yeah, Africa was always a bit in advance on those things compared to us.
I mean, don't get me started. Like, I think in probably every other podcast I talk about M-Pesa as like the bastion of kind of tech in Africa. The one thing that really annoyed me about M-Pesa, though, was you need a Kenyan number to be able to access it. So when I was there, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to set up my M-Pesa account. I was like, oh, no, I need to get a Safaricom
number. Yeah, it's still
number.
Closed networks.
It is a closed network, which is a shame because actually that would make it, you know, even even better and even bigger. Yeah. And finally, a third one you might have in mind?
On the very techie side, a biotech company in the RNA activation field. So it's called Mina Therapeutics. And what they do is, we all have like different pairs of chromosomes. And so when one of the gene doesn't function quite well, you can develop disease. So one example would be Ehlers disease. For instance, mm-hmm. You don't grow as much with Ehlers disease. And so what that company does is they don't repair the part of your gene that's broken, but they make the one that functions well mm-hmm. produce more protein and more. So effectively, you balance and you can, for instance, grow.
Yeah.
And solve tons of disease that are genetical disease. Mm. And so that, for us is, linked to, we all know now what RNA is after COVID.
and if we don't, we might be a little bit kind of vaccine deniers, but yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, this sort of inventions and progress that we've made over the last few years, is really opening the door for a lot of innovation and solving really big problems for us. So very excited about that company. They're UK based as well.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about this maybe offline, but I 100% agree. And we've got a number of companies in our portfolio that are exploring not quite these spaces, but very similar in terms of the technology and the types of problems that they're trying to solve. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, Fatou and Stephanie, I can't wait to get into some of these topics in the main podcast. In the meantime, thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you
for having us.